Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Gentlemen, let's pod.
Let's pod indeed.
Hands in. What did I say again? Oh, yeah. I haven't even said it for a year and a half, 2 years. Hands in, pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Tim, that's very rude.
The Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. This is audio, JB. No one knows what I was doing then to get that response. So I'll just move on and say thank you very much for downloading. Thank you very much for listening. We're on the Acast app. We are on iTunes. And then you can subscribe and please do. Just because the rugby season has finished in the UK, there's a bit more rugby to talk about. And in any case, we're going to keep going every single week through the summer as well. I'm Tim. JB.
Hello, Tim.
Hello. Hello, Phil.
Hi, Tim.
Right. Just to let you know what's coming up on this podcast today, we're going to be talking about the European Champions Cup draw. We're going to be talking about the Under-20s World Cup final. We've got a special interview with Thomas Waldron this week, and we've got Jeff Parling coming on next week's podcast, and plenty more besides a Ginger 15 inspired by the move of Paul O'Connell to Toulon. Let's quickly touch upon a couple of those transfers then. Paul O'Connell to Toulon, it had been touted, but surprised. I think it's a good move. They've just got one veteran out and they're bringing another in.
Well, two out, one in.
Two out, one in.
Yeah, Ali Williams and Bakis both retire and bring someone. I think he's slightly older than... Yeah.
37.
Ali Williams, he's 35 now. He's 36 this year.
Yes.
But he'll be 38 by the time his contract ends. I think it is a good move. I think it's a good move for both of them.
Yeah, if he wants to do it and he's willing to carry on playing and he's in good shape, which undoubtedly he is because he plays very well.
And
yeah.
Why not? And it's a perfect squad. I mean... The fitness and conditioning of guys now mean that you can carry on playing to a later age than you used to. But if his body does start to struggle a little bit, then it's the perfect place to be when you've got a squad that deep.
Yeah, and it can go and relax by the beach in the nice warm climate.
I've got a stupid question for you. Do you think he gets paid? He's going to get paid much for this?
That is a stupid question.
Let me tell you why I don't think it is a stupid question. It's because he's getting on in age. It's kind of the last hurrah to go and win something. Now, he's won plenty, so he doesn't need to prove anything in that respect. But you get to play with superstars left, right and centre. And I wouldn't be surprised if part of the sell is, OK, you can come, you're going to get a good salary, like Premiership-style salary, but what else we give you is you play with all the superstars, strength and conditioning on your terms, it's all tailored, you're by the beach. 2 years, let's go and win some European Cups.
You're right, the whole package is so enticing that the
are
money.
Are we talking about Paul O'Connell here? Or
James Hart, no.
Yeah, you're quite right. You don't have to like double the money elsewhere.
No.
You can have a very competitive salary because everything else is so
positive. Might have matched what he was on.
I mean, how much would you play for Toulon for, Tim?
Right now.
You want danger money, Tim. If you're going to be playing for Toulon, it's going to be a risky business.
That's risking death.
Yeah. Ooh, what we got here, Tim?
Jelly baby there.
Oh, thank you.
Help yourself. Just take them over there.
Will do.
Players have jelly babies, don't they, before games? So I think I'm making out some during the podcast. No. It'll be a competitive salary, won't it?
And yes.
They're buying his pedigree and they're buying his experience and they're buying having him in the dressing room. And it's because they've got guys like that in the changing room is why they eke out results and have them and three back-to-back European titles. Another move then, which hasn't happened yet, but everything is pointing towards, we've heard this for a while and now it's come out in public and it's basically people are saying, Talupe Faletau could move to Bath.
Devastating news.
I think it'd be a good move. Well, definitely would be a good move for him.
Is he a good player? 100%. I absolutely love the guy. I think he's brilliant. But it is disappointing for me.
Why?
Well,
you love Welsh players leaving Wales.
Hang on a minute. It's got nothing to do with that. It's because I believe Toby Faletau was the signing that they wanted.
Talupe.
Sorry, I'm so culturally insensitive. He's the signing they wanted if they failed to sign the South African eight
Dwayne Vermaelen.
Dwayne Vermaelen.
Or, yeah.
And now he's gone to Toulon.
Dwayne Vermaelen's
gone to Toulon.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like their second choice. And I really wanted to see Vermaelen come to the Premiership. Because I think a lot of people could have had Valletau. It's a good move for Bath. Is he much better than Leroy Houston? He's good. Very, very good.
It's not about having someone better or...
It's squad depth, isn't it?
It's about having two or more guys.
Yeah.
But I mean, just imagine now, Leroy Houston's probably their number one eight.
He was, yeah.
And they're going to bring in another guy who's there or thereabouts. So they don't. There's no drop-off if one of them is injured. But if they bring in Dwayne Vermaelen, that's a huge, huge upgrade, isn't it? So now your starter is now a really exceptional backup.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I'm a bit upset.
But again, I think if you're Warren Gatland, you go, I quite like that he's... If he's going to move out of Wales, I quite like that he's at Bath. For the same reason as a guy going to Toulon, because it's like they've got the squad depth that if he's 80%, they'll just go, it's all right.
Yeah.
Just it's all right. We'll save you for next week.
Yeah.
Have a rest. Yeah.
Mind you, he's not going to play for Bath before the World Cup anyway, even if he does move. So
no,
maybe
actually, there's a good chance that it won't be Warren Gatland's problem when he does start playing for Bath.
After the World Cup.
Well, it might go wrong.
Nah.
Or it's either going to go really wrong or really right.
How badly wrong would it have to go?
Group stage is gone.
Such a tough group to get out of. It's so difficult to get out of that group.
Mm.
With England, Australia, France, Fiji, with Nemanja Nadolu in the
England,
form
Australia,
he's in at the
Wales,
moment.
Wales. England,
sorry.
Australia, Wales.
England, Australia, Wales, then Fiji. Then Uruguay, who's slightly easier.
Here's where I would say... If Wales don't get out of the group stage, it's going to be far more serious for us than not getting out of the group stages. Far more serious. Gatland goes and we are in another 5 years of absolute slump. That is what will happen. Gatland gets through to the quarters, the semis. I think he'll be all right. His job will be safe. If he wins the whole thing...
He'll be king of Wales, won't he?
Well, not only will he be king of Wales, which you can't because it's a principality, you idiots. if he wins the whole thing, it means the All Blacks don't win the whole thing. And I wonder who would want a new head coach if they don't win the whole thing.
So, good point. Another move, James Johnston has moved to Wasps. It was widely reported he was thinking about Sale Sharks.
By us?
Well, no. It was a fair rumour. He said he did talk to Sale Sharks, but the lure of European Champions Cup rugby meant he went to Wasps. Sale, they've got a lot of money left in their salary cap. They've lost some big players like Michael Patterson. Mm. Mark Cueto's retired. They have got money to spend, but nobody seems to want to go to Sale Sharks. The Sale Sharks media guy, I had a little look on the Sale Sharks forum just to see what they were saying about the situation. And the Sale Sharks media person came on and said, oh, yeah, we're going to do loads of signings, but the way it works in a World Cup year is you wait until the end of the World Cup.
Oh, no.
I think that's smoke and mirrors, because he's obviously trying to appease Sale Sharks fans who are saying, hold on a minute, we signed one person.
Appease who?
The Sale Sharks. The Sale Sharks fans, JD.
I generally think we are the closest thing that they have to fans. And we're not exactly diehard.
But let's not be flippant. The attendances haven't been great at the AJ Bell Stadium.
No, they
obviously, they're fans. But whereas I heard Conor O'Shea on the radio on Friday saying, we've got one more signing, which I can't announce yet because of a visa, and then we're done. So on the one hand, you've got Harlequins going, yeah, all our business is done. We've got one more to name. When the visa comes through, we'll do that. And you've got the Sale Sharks media guy going, oh, yeah, no. All the signings in a World Cup year happen after the World Cup.
No, that's why he's a media guy, I guess.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, I'd be well nervous. But James Johnson to Wasps, that strengthens what's an already strong-looking pack and getting better.
Oh, I think it's a wonderful signing. Yeah, I love it.
It is a good signing.
I mean, I didn't say this last week. I don't think I did, but I'll say it now. I think Wasps and Bath are basically the future. They've got a blueprint of how you build successful teams. Huge back rows, hard-working second rows, and ball-carrying front rows.
I mean,
by the way, they're scrummaging both sets.
Yeah.
Both sets of forwards. Can scrummage.
Have they been listening to anyone when they're building that kind of that idea, that blueprint for a team?
I don't know. Someone knows a thing or two, though. Someone knows a thing or two.
Well, let's hear from, well, certainly one of, along with Nathan Hughes and maybe a couple of others, Francois Lowe, one of the best performing back rows in the Aviva Premiership last season, because he's on the Egg Chasers podcast right now. We spoke early this week to Thomas Waldrum of Exeter Chiefs. He was there at a Canterbury Ambassador Day with his new teammate, Jeff Parling. And he have a little listen out, because he dobs Jeff Parling in a little bit. Have a listen to the nickname that Thomas Waldrum has for Jeff Parling. And next week, you will hear the interview with Jeff Parling and you can hear Jeff Parling's response. But right now, here's Thomas Waldrum talking to me and JB. Phil was at work. What were you doing on that on Friday? Friday morning.
So I can't actually talk about it. There's an NDA in place.
Oh, wow.
I'm afraid.
He was counting bricks for a secret project.
That made it sound a lot more exciting than it probably was, Phil.
Yes, definitely, Tim.
They haven't chose the gas supply or
absolutely.
Something.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, this is Thomas Waldrum, and we'll be talking more the other side of this, but enjoy.
Hey, Tim.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, mate. How you going?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate.
Yeah, so we're from the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. I'm sure you download and listen every week.
Of course, yeah. It's the first thing I do every Monday morning.
Oh, good man.
Without a doubt. After bagging another brace of tries in your record-breaking season, you download the podcast. Congratulations on that personal milestone. I suppose you're going to say it's all about the team and everything, but that's still a special little milestone to have achieved this season.
I think it's all about you, Tom.
That's the thing. The season probably went better than I ever expected, and to top it off like that, it was pretty nice.
Pick out one from the season, then, one of your many. I know it must be hard to pick out one try.
It probably wasn't the Premiership. It was probably the European quarter-final against Newcastle, where I got a pass from Dave Ewers, and I got to go over the try line with his out-the-door back pass, which was quite nice, because definitely really enjoyed playing alongside him this year. It was a lot of fun.
That's a seriously physical back row.
Yes, Dave is a big unit. And then Ben White and the crazy Australian.
Now, regular listeners to the podcast will know how much JB raves and raves about Dave Ewers, or Big Dave, as he calls him.
Just Big Dave.
So just how good is this lad?
Oh, that's the thing. I've been lucky enough to play with some special players in my time, like Richie and Kieran Reid, and I'd put him right up there. He's got the skill set. He's got the physicality. He can tackle. He can get over the ball, steal the ball. Worst comes to worst, he can definitely jump on a line out. I think
worst comes to worst. If he had to jump, he
emergency
can jump.
Situation.
Yeah, when you're sort of like me and Dave, you're not trusted as much in the line out as other people. But I think he's right up there. He's an immense talent. It's a shame he didn't make the World Cup training squad, but I think his time's going to come soon. As long as he keeps performing like he did this year, I hope he should come.
So this is your off season right now. So what are you doing? Is it plenty of surfing? Have you been travelling? What's going on, Tom?
I've sort of just been mucking around, really, just going around seeing Devon on the long weekends. I've got my two boys are at school. It's a bit hard to take them out, so we're just sort of travelling and seeing the sights of Devon, because that's the thing we really enjoyed down here, and go to the beach, have some fish and chips, and love life, really.
My brother plays at London Irish, and the one thing he's looking forward to when his career does come to an end is skiing and riding a motorcycle. What other stuff are you prevented from doing? Like in the off season, you can't just go and. I know the Saracens boys jumped out of a plane, but there's restrictions on what
Saracens
you can do.
Saracens are different, though.
That's the thing. It's because you got a contract. You sort of don't want to jeopardise by doing anything. My wife tells me off for going on the boys' scooters and stuff like that. Because yeah. You see them in the park, and then you sort of get excited and try to do tricks and stuff. But
which is crazy, really, because you've given out something like 30-odd professional contracts to what is essentially testosterone-filled big kids, and then you expect them not to go skiing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And there are no skateboards and stuff like that, no BMX riding.
Do you know how much money I would pay to watch you go BMX riding?
Oh, that's the thing. It's a bit of fun. I enjoy it. It's good.
We need to get that done. We mentioned Saracens, and they have little things when they jump out of a plane. But I think from the outside, I don't know how much you feel this when you're down there in Devon, but certainly for myself and for JB and for a lot of people, I think Exeter Chiefs is everybody's second favourite club. From the inside, tell us what that environment is like, if it is as special as it seems from the outside.
Yeah, I think it's just different. Like coming from Leicester, they've got their way of doing stuff, and Exeter's got their own way of doing stuff. It's probably a bit more laid back. Rob enjoys a bit of laughter and a bit of joking around. And then when we're away and getting a bit closer to the games, we get a little bit more serious. I think it's just an environment where the balance is right on and off the field, and I think people just enjoy it, and you just want to have fun and enjoy what you're doing. I think that's the main bit that we're doing right down here at the moment.
It's nice to hear Rob Baxter like that, because he seems very laid back, but also like and as you say, around game days and stuff, very very focused. But he's a bit of a joker as well. Then he can be.
Yeah, I think and the right times, right places. He definitely loves a joke, and gives a bit of stick to the boys, which you need to have, I think. It shows both sides of them, a serious side and a guy that you can actually talk to and get along with and have a conversation with.
And I suppose being down in Exeter means probably more than any other team. Maybe you and Newcastle have the most long coach rides home. I bet you have a bit of fun on those, don't you?
It definitely is. But that's the thing, because you're on the road, you need to enjoy it, and I think that's what we try to do as well. We have a nice bus as well, so which is definitely handy.
At our club, Broughton Park, we have a little game, which is... what's it called, JB?
I don't know if you're familiar with this game. It's called Over the Tops. Have you heard of this?
Is it arm wrestling?
No, so Over the Tops. So on the coach ride on the way home, Over the Tops, and it's two lads, you race in twos from the front to the back of the coach, climbing over the chairs naked.
And of course, it's a race, so it's competitive.
You know, I have not heard or seen of it, but I've seen a couple of boys doing skydiving where they try to put you into the cabin space at the top.
We've done that. It's brilliant.
Love it.
Yeah.
So next year you've got Julian Salvi coming. You've obviously got Jeff Parling coming along too. Does that make Leicester the official feeder club of Exeter Chiefs now? Because that's kind of how I'm reading it.
Yeah, I think they must have just wanted some more sunshine, and I think they've sort of come down to Devon.
Makes sense.
Have you managed to get... Are you going to get him onto... I can imagine Julian Salvi's already probably pretty decent on a surfboard. But Jeff, I'm not so sure. Can he surf?
He says he can, but I think he might have to have a longboard, I think. I don't think he'll have a short one. He'd probably have to an 8-foot longboard. I think they both would enjoy it, actually.
My opinion on Exeter is they've got a lot of international class players, but they're just lucky that the international coaches...
Or unlucky from a personal point of view.
Well, yeah. It depends on which way you look at it, because from a club point of view, lucky that the international coaches aren't regularly picking yourself, the Henry Slades. Well, Noel has played. But in general, I think next season's going to be a lot...
Ewers will be the other one, obviously.
Of course. And I think like next season it's going to be a lot tougher, because I think these boys will start to get the recognition.
Yeah, this is what I think will happen as well. But that's the thing, we've got a core... group of those young guys in the team week in, week out with Slady, Nolsey, Dickers, Dave. That's all like the backbone for us at the moment, and you got the older guys coming in to add a bit more experience. But that's the thing, if those guys go away and stuff, you sort of have to start all over again. But I think you've got to back ourselves with some of the talent we got down here, which is it's pretty nice to see them training and playing as well down here. Not many people probably know who they are, but they're really talented young lads, so I think we'll be happy.
If we were to ask you from this season then to give us one name of a young up-and-comer who we might not know about, who would that be?
Max Badilli. I think he's a fullback. He's got something special about him. But that's the thing, it's a long season, so he probably might get a crack this year, but I think he's going to have a good future coming up anyway.
Tom, now listen, obviously you're a Canterbury ambassador, and that's why we've got your time today. I do have one thing, though. We've on the podcast, we've been leading a bit of a crusade of two things. Firstly, and in the you know the promotional pictures, you get the new kits and everything, and you have the promotional pictures where you know I might have a few players stood there, or the whole team or whatever. Quite often it happens where they're in full kit, but they wear trainers.
It's a farce.
And it's got to stop, Tom. So we just, one player at a time, we just need to get the word out there. It's got to be boots, full boots, when you're wearing full kit.
Yeah, I can, next time I do, I'll definitely make sure I'm in boots just for the podcast, yep.
Sounds like a pledge to me.
Good man, Tom. And just all the boys, just do not accept any Exeter Chief player wearing trainers in promotional shots, whatever the photographer might try and tell you. And also, socks pulled up. Got to have a word with these lads that are letting the socks pull down. I know JB's screwing his head up. He doesn't agree with me on this one.
Oh,
but...
I absolutely do.
Oh, you no, do?
I don't agree.
I agree as well.
Exactly. These kids with their socks down.
This is not the game. They give you socks, long socks, for a reason.
Exactly, Tom.
If they gave you short socks, you'd wear short socks.
Only time it's acceptable is if you're a Fijian Sevens player. That's the only time.
Yeah, especially with these new ones coming in. There's new socks. They boys cut off the bottom of their socks to get extra grip. And then they have to take them on.
Sorry, you went past me again.
I'm not aware of this. What's going on, Tom?
So there's a new, like a grippy sock that keeps your foot stuck in your boot. Instead, there's normal socks sometimes that you slide out of your boots now and then. They've brought out a special sock, but you have to cut the end off and then tape your plain sock over the top on.
What?
Wow.
True socks are called.
Wow, I'm looking into that, Tom. Thank you for the heads up on that one. I had no idea this was going on. We'll look into it. Just before we go, and it's been really great having your time. I've got a few questions I've got to ask you. So, is there a TV show or box set that you've been mad into? I don't know if you watched the Game of Thrones finale or you've been into that or anything else.
Not that I'm into Suits. I've been watching.
Oh, you're not.
Suits is all right, Jay.
We'll come back to this another time.
JV's not a fan of Suits. I like Suits.
It's a program for people who don't wear suits about what they think people in suits do.
Well,
I don't wear a suit for a living. Tom doesn't wear a suit for a living, so yeah, that's why. There you go. Right, best player in your position in the world, past or present. Could be someone you played against or with.
Zinedine Brooke.
Mad skills he had, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's a pretty solid.
What's your cheat meal, Tom?
That's probably the toughest question you ask me.
Take your time, Tom. It's an important decision. Take your time.
Yeah, I know. It would be a three-course meal. It would have to be like calamari to start with.
Good.
For main, I'll come back to that. But for pudding, it'll be an apple crumble.
Nice.
With ice cream. Ben and Jerry's, preferably. Might just be traditional and just go for a roast chicken.
That's a pretty good cheat meal. That's a pretty healthy cheat meal. Well done.
You're a man of distinction.
Yeah. Right. So we have a little segment on the show called Banter Squadron where we try and celebrate those players who have a particularly funny or entertaining on and off the field. So the Honey Badger's in. Joe Marler is in. Can you tell us someone else who should be in? Who's got particularly good chat or is quite a good laugh?
George Suter. I'll definitely recommend him. He's one of those ones that just keeps badgering you until he actually gets something out of you.
Persistent fella.
I've seen George Suter neck a pint at a corporate sevens tournament.
It would not surprise me.
Yep.
Was he pretty sharp with it?
Yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, most people have to be badgered into this, and someone in the crowd just said, neck it, and he just went straight down.
No, he's that kind of guy he is. Top man.
And any memorable initiations you've done or seen through your career?
Yeah, I think when I was in Hawke's Bay, I think we had to do a week. We call them wheat bix. We call them a wheatabix over here. With wasabi in the middle like a sandwich. You had to eat that without any fluid whatsoever. That took a while. And then it was a pint of milk. And then I think it was a pint of beer as well.
Nice.
Yeah. The wheat bix just dried your mouth out unbelievably.
Sounds like something which happens in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, it sounds like they give us a run for our money in the UK.
I think, yeah, they probably would.
Can I just ask a quick question regarding the difference between Exeter and Leicester? Because you've had, you probably had the best season of your career this year. And it looked to us as if you got a lot more of the ball and you were used in a different way. And in some ways, it kind of felt that Exeter would build almost a game plan around your talents, whereas in Leicester, it felt a little bit like you were just part of a bigger machine. Is that a right summary, or am I completely off there?
No, well, that's the thing. People do ask me, and I think it was more when I talked to Rob, and I pretty much made the decision 10 minutes after meeting Rob Baxter, because he's that kind of guy. His people skills are amazing, and just the things he had to say. But the way he said it was, we don't want you to come down here and do what you've been doing for Leicester, but you can do it in different ways. We've got our systems, and they're there for a reason, but then you can find ways within the systems of being able to get your hands on the ball. And I think, for me, that's worked probably better than ever. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, because I do think that's a sign of a brilliant coach, someone who can spot a very good player anyway and then put him into the system and identify that talent to make him
that's
even
like,
better.
It's like any manager in any job, I suppose, actually, like making the most of the skills you've got at your disposal, isn't it, I guess?
Mm.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The Chiefs management do a lot of analysis and on every player they come in. They don't just see them play a few games. They do in-depth stuff, and then they want to know what they're like off the field as well. So I think that's a big thing that Rob and all the coaches do, and I think that's what has built the club to where it is at the moment.
Tom, it's been brilliant. Listen, we're going to talk to Jeff Parling in a second. You could stitch him up if you want. You could just tip us off about something to ask him about.
Oh,
I know it's putting you on the spot. But,
yeah, I know. Just call him because he looks like the Grinch of Grinch that Stole Christmas. Just if you come down to Exeter, make sure you have a bit of life left in you for Christmas and stuff, because we enjoy stuff down here.
Yeah, all right, you're on, Tom. Thank you for that.
No problem. Cool, cheers. Thank you very much.
Take it easy, Tom. Speak to you again.
Cheers, guys. Thank you. Bye.
Thomas Waldron there. And his nickname for Jeff Parling is the Grinch,
which is very good.
a lot of players have this game face when they pull a face when they're going into contact and stuff. And Jeff Parling does have a particularly good game face.
He does, actually.
I like the Grinch for Parling. I can see it.
You can see it.
Yeah, very good.
But what will Jeff Parling's response be to that? What will Jeff Parling's response be to the accusation from Thomas Waldron that he cannot surf? What will it? What else will Jeff Parling have to say? It's a very, very interesting listen. What so
very good.
I'll go along with that. It's nice hearing. It's nice hearing about the atmosphere at Exeter Chiefs, isn't it?
It's only an observation, but it's something which I've picked up from Exeter. It strikes me that all the English teams now, the premium is shopping around for young talent. That's where they think they can get the most value by paying a low salary to academy lads from other. So snatching up other academy lads. Autorac would be one. Northampton's got an absolute handful of them.
Yeah.
And it seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
And I completely agree. And then you develop the talent and see where it goes. Strikes me as Exeter have got not the opposite idea, but they seem to find a lot more value from older players in different systems. And I think it's incredibly smart.
And not old players.
Proven
pedigree-filled prime-age players. Yeah, I completely agree with you, Jay.
They find value.
We should probably mention pool five, is it, of the European Champions Cup? When that draw was made, what on earth was going through the minds of the guys that ended up in that draw?
Well, apparently the reason it's ended up like this is because there's an error in the seeding system.
Yeah, because Toulon weren't one of the top three seeds, were they?
No.
How can that happen?
Because of the league position in the domestic tables.
They have to change that. But the top three seeds were the top three, the winners of the leagues. And then Clermont and Bath, I'm just looking at it and I've just got it up. So the top tier seeds were Saracens, Glasgow, Stade Francais, won the league. And then
won the playoffs. Yeah.
And then Clermont and Bath, who were second place because they lost in the final. And then tier two, Munster, Northampton, who won the league, Toulon, who won the league, and the Champions Cup.
The regular season.
Ospreys and Ulster.
I think if qualification for the competition is on, where you finish in the league, which it is,
yeah.
Why isn't seeding?
No, I like the way, one thing I do like the football do, they have a coefficient based on previous performance in that competition.
I like the fact that you said coefficient.
Hey, what can I say?
Yeah, something like the IRB World Ranking, where it takes all of your performances for the past, well, I think it takes them for the past 4 years, but gives the highest weighting to the most recent performances. Yeah. And if you play against a higher ranked team, you get a bigger weighting than a lower ranked team.
Do you think it'd be more difficult? Could you just export that equation from international rugby and put it into club rugby?
Yeah.
Would that be a little bit too tricky?
No, I think you'd be able to do pretty much exactly, based on my understanding of it. It's more data, but it'd be easy to do.
Let me tell you, something very dicey is about to happen. JB mentioned that when it comes to pool five, which includes, because we haven't mentioned it actually, we just assumed you know, but Bath, Toulon, Leinster and Wasps, we... JB said, I've got some facts about this.
Uh-oh.
Now, Phil is our resident fact man. JB normally offers up opinions that are quite often fact-free.
No.
So, JB, the floor is yours. You want to give us some facts?
Well, no,
I've got the fact button ready. I'm just waiting to play this noise.
Fact.
JB, okay. Go on.
Well, first of all, you've ruined my fact. You've ruined my number
just,
one
is that
fact.
Your own? Are you okay?
Right, cool. Because my number one fact is everyone in that pool has won the competition before. Fact.
Very good.
Thanks, mate. The second fact was, if you combine all of those teams and their wins together, they've only won it two less times than everybody else combined. Fact.
Wow.
So they've almost won it as many times as every other team.
So if someone from that pool wins it, which is completely possible, it's even more impressive.
Well, it's possible, but it's actually more difficult.
Oh, sorry, one more thing. They were all semi-finalists, or quarter-finalists, sorry. Fact.
Wasps weren't.
Yeah, they were.
Wasps weren't out in the group stage.
No, they went to Toulon.
Yeah, they went to Toulon.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I know what you were about to say, Phil. It's exactly my point, is that there's not going to be a runner-up out of that pool, is there?
Very, very unlikely for them to be a runner-up out of that pool.
Not a fact, but... Well,
fact.
We'll play it anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're going to beat each other enough that they won't get their...
Yeah,
the second place points.
I think the conventional wisdom in this as well is that Toulon will get out of the group. But I think that group is going to be so difficult.
Yeah.
Right? Because Toulon have got to go against Bath and Wasps, who are basically identical. And they've got to put up with their big runners, harsh defence, and more to the point, all that speed.
And Leinster, who beat both Bath and Wasps last year and took Toulon two extra time away.
Tired of ads intruding into your favourite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey.
I know. It's hell of a ball.
Right now, pick your I mean, if it was being done today, and on the basis of what we've seen the season just gone, who are your two that progressed from that pool, JB?
Oh, couldn't tell you.
Toulon only. No one else gets through.
All right, that's exactly how I call it.
Because
I think Leinster will finish in second spot.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go and join the two of you and say, yes, it's going to be Toulon, but I wouldn't put money on it.
And the others, yeah. I mean, which is the... Who do you think's going... dodged a bullet there. I'm looking at the... I mean, they're all tough, but I think Exeter, as like a third-tier seed, will be thinking... Well, they might even be a fourth-tier seed, but they're one of the lower pots. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'll be going, yeah, I love that. We've got a chance.
Well, let's have a look at some of the other groups.
I mean, Ospreys are a good side, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Clermont, Ospreys, Exeter and Bordeaux.
Bordeaux. Yeah. Going to France is notoriously difficult, but yeah. Playing France at home,
exactly,
fancy that. They'll fancy Ospreys at home.
I mean, we saw Clermont at Sale, and they didn't look that good.
Exactly.
They didn't look that good.
French teams travelling, that's what I mean. Yeah. Two French teams, you go win our home games, which is no easy thing, but it's a target.
That's going to be as good a chance as Exeter are going to have for a long time to get out of a European Cup pool.
Agreed, absolutely.
Oyonnax, Toulouse, Ulster, Saracens. I feel like I've seen one of these games before.
Yeah, I've seen that Saracens Ulster game a few times.
Yeah, well, Saracens to lose as well.
Oh, yeah, Saracens to lose as well.
Well, we've got months to think about this, but
yes.
it's that pool five.
When does the European Cup kick off? Like, what
it'll be after the World Cup.
Yeah.
Premiership doesn't start till the middle of October.
Does it not?
No, 18th of October, I think. Right, so we've Thomas Waldron we've spoken about. We've spoken about the signings and the changes. One of those changes was Paul O'Connell, which inspired on Twitter. And thank you very much for getting involved. It's at Rugby Podcast. You can find us there, and we keep chatting rugby through the week and coming up with ideas for the podcast. So you can hit us up there. But I'm going to play a song. Remember what this is?
Basement Jacks.
And the song is?
Got no idea. I don't know anything about songs.
Something. Red Alert.
Red Alert.
Oh, Red he's Alert. So good, isn't he?
Yes.
That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
Exactly.
It's Red Alert. So we're going to do a Ginger 15 in honour of Paul O'Connell and his move to Toulon, the evergreen, or ever red, Paul O'Connell. So Paul O'Connell is our captain in the second row. We need to pick a 15 to go around, and we've already had some suggestions on Twitter, and you can keep them coming at Rugby Podcast. Come on, then. I'm going to let you take the lead on this one, Phil.
Oh, thanks, Tim.
And we'll just, me and JB will chip in if we've got anyone to add in.
Okay.
Go on.
Starting in the front row.
Go on then.
Loosehead prop. We saw him this weekend. He lost against the Brumbies. Stephen Kitsoff.
Who?
Stormers Loosehead, who's travelling to Bordeaux next season.
Kitsoff could definitely be in our adult 15, couldn't
he? It's a great, yes. I was going to say he could have made our adult film 15. Hooker then.
There's a few Irish hookers, but I've gone for...
All of them, maybe.
Most Irish hookers, apart from Rory Bett, who's got no hair at all. I've gone for Adrian Strauss, Cheetah's South African.
Okay. Like that.
Strawberry blonde. Tight head.
Dan Cole.
I've gone for Samson Lee.
Oh, yeah. Two great props.
Why is no one talking about Nick Altrak in this?
Ginger?
He's not ginger, is he?
Oh, I think
ginger.
He's not ginger.
No.
I think he's ginger.
Brown.
Look him up.
Nick Altrak follows us on Twitter. He's I can see him right now on his computer logging into Twitter to unfollow us because of that comment.
Block us.
Not that there's anything wrong with being ginger.
That is ginger.
That is brown. What are you talking about, Jay?
That looks ginger. That is
brown. Sort of... Brown. That looks. It's got a tint of red
it
there.
It does have a tint of red, and that's all you need.
I can see that, but I'd say brown hair. So
that is ginger.
Samson Lee.
Samson Lee taking the spot from Dan Cole. Good shout. Second row, then.
Now, it's almost a pity that we've got Paul O'Connell.
Yeah.
It's not, but I wanted to have two humongous ginger beards in...
Oh, you're thinking of Wales' Jake Ball.
Jake Ball and Eric Lund.
Is Eric Lund ginger?
He is. Yeah. Big ginger
beard. He's
got
a big ginger beard, but Paul Tito, the old Cardiff
Paul
Blues
Tito
captain,
he's a proper
redhead.
Yeah.
If you wanted a proper redhead in the row, that would be one.
They all look like wildlings. Wildlings.
Because if Jake Ball shaved... You'd suddenly. It's only his beard that's brown.
Yeah.
It's only his beard that's red. His hair's brown, but.
Yeah. So I'll go with Paul Tito. I like Paul Tito.
Paul Tito's in alongside Paul O'Connell. Back row.
I've gone for. I couldn't really think of a good eight. So short of moving one of those into the back row, I've gone for Hugh Vivian.
Nice.
Yes.
Yes. The Vivmeister.
Rob Harley. Scotland's Rob Harley. And good. Martin William Nugget.
Martin Williams. Yeah.
That's reasonable.
I was struggling at first, and I remembered that James Rodwell, does he still play sevens for England?
He does.
He was a number eight, used to be at Moseley.
He was at Moseley, yeah.
You would have played against him a few times, wouldn't
you? Yeah, I did play against him a couple of times.
Onto the halfbacks.
I've moved, halfbacks. There's a lot of tens, so I've had to move some of them around.
Okay, let's hear it.
So I've gone for Nick Sturzacker of the Melbourne Rebels at nine, alongside another Super Rugby player, Ihaya West.
Never heard of him.
Good, very nippy young fly half.
Oh, right, not good, I've not heard of him.
No, not good, you've not heard of him.
Okay.
Which then leaves Paddy Jackson.
Oh, good.
Inside centre.
I'm going to play Red Morning Light by Kings of Leon now. There we go, carry on.
Thanks,
good,
Tim.
Good.
No worries.
With the only Italian ginger I've ever seen, I think, Gonzalo Garcia, the outside centre.
Very good.
That's nice.
Wasn't Brian Liebenhang or Liebenberg, the big ginger centre for Stad? South African ginger guy.
Yeah.
He was massive as well.
Well, yeah, he could go in there.
Well, put him in then.
Okay.
Good.
Wingers.
Well, I've hidden Neil Jenkins on the wing.
Yeah, I can understand why.
To kick sticks.
Just to kick sticks.
Alongside Gareth Thomas.
Yep.
And either Josh Brake of England Sevens, who can do a job on the wing, or who was I going to say? Tom Biggs.
Tom Biggs.
Tom Biggs.
Excellent. That's a fine looking 15, that.
Well, it's not fine looking, is it? It's quite the opposite.
Yeah, it's not a great looking 15.
Well, that's nothing to do with their red hair. That means it's not a great looking 15.
This is the second picture I've seen like that today. Now, I'll just explain the picture. It's a torso of a rugby player, but with the bath kit sprayed onto it. Was this some sort of promotional thing?
We talked about this a couple of years ago.
Did we?
That was Tom Biggs. That's the IPL kit, wasn't it?
Ah, is that what it is?
That was Tom Biggs.
All right, well, enough of that.
A little promotional. But let's talk stash. Let me get the little stash update music.
Do we have any?
Well, we don't know, is the answer to that one. Because there is a picture that's been leaked online.
Stash!
Of what could be the New England kit.
Yes.
Now, we tried to get some information from Jeff Parling about the New England stash, which is out on 6th of July.
And said it was nice.
And JB, you're going to be going down.
Indeed.
You can hear what he has to say about the England kit, but I'll ruin another spoiler about next week's podcast. He doesn't tell us exactly what it is or give us a picture. He just says,
he does
it's
say
nice.
It's going to be white with a flower on it.
He did say that, didn't
predictable.
He?
Predictable, yeah.
But that is a picture that Mr. Rugby on Twitter...
Well, don't turn it away.
I'm just checking the name. Has tweeted, that's a picture, and it's got a Rugby World Cup logo on it, it's got an England rose on it, it's got a Canterbury logo, and...
In the scheme of things...
I don't know where it's come from, but...
It looks suspiciously Photoshopped to me.
You think?
Yes.
I quite like it. If that is the case, I do quite like it. The thing I don't like about it is I don't like the V thing.
The V-neck, yeah.
It's very kind of... I don't know.
So, Canterbury, JB and Phil will not be... Well, JB doesn't want one anyway because he's Welsh, but Phil will not be requiring one. I love the V-neck.
I will still be requiring one, Tim. But I don't think that is it.
Sorry?
Do you like the round neck more?
Do you know what? I'm not a fan. The England World Cup kit that they won the World Cup in 2003 with a really high round neck collar.
I love that.
I don't like that.
That, I think that's the best kit of all
time.
No,
it's too high. Look at the pictures of Johnny Wilkinson in that kit now. It's too high.
I know. Do you know the better version of that was the South African one? Because there's like a little yellow bit here.
Mm.
It's the yellow bit here that works well for radio by the throat.
Yeah. I like the look of that a lot. I've just mentioned Johnny. The rose is like an old school rose. It's changed slightly.
It is that one. I don't like when they have three things across the chest. It should be two things, and that's enough for anyone.
Yeah, like the South African kit with the ASICs in the centre and then the two badges.
Because, the temptation is more tokenism. So, like, before you know it, you've then got something for which means something else. And, you can already see it creeping in. So South Africa's now got the national flower, and now it's got the Springbok, and then it's going to have the Rugby World Cup thing, and then it's going to have the actual make. And how long until the next thing comes about?
Mm. Yeah.
But we will wait 6th of July, and JB, I believe you're going to be down there representing us at the kit launch for the New England kit.
I think me and Brim Williams may have a weekend in a jolly in London and then go down to Twickenham, because I believe that's the quickest way to see the new finery that Canterbury are producing.
Two Welshmen we're sending down to represent us at Twickenham.
I'll see what I'm doing that weekend.
Yeah, we'll have to. And while we're talking about the Red Rose, the England lost against New Zealand in the World Cup Under-20 Championship Final.
Yeah.
To a really good New Zealand side.
Yes.
I would say it was a great game. It wasn't a great game. It was competitive. England made a lot of handling errors because of an aggressive New Zealand defence that never looked like they were going to let up and lose the game. And they could have put the game out of sight with a couple of penalties well before the end. But England only lost by 5 points, 21-16. And I'll tell you, there was a couple of New Zealanders that really showed up. The number 8 looks a hell of a player.
Yeah, Akira Iwani, who's contracted to the Blues. He played 9 or 10 times for the Blues this season. And every single game that I've watched for the under-20s this year, he's scored in. He's looked absolutely superb.
I didn't see the final, but I did see a lot of games and the lead-up to it. And the... what do they call them? Baby Blacks or something?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Seems sarcastic.
Yeah,
they're massive. Particularly the number 18 tight head prop that came on with about 8 minutes to go was enormous. I've never seen legs like
it. Well, tell you what, that 13 is electric. I can't remember his name now, but he is some player. He scored, I can't remember which game I was watching. Maybe it was against France or something.
Can't remember his name. Can't remember the game I was scoring. But
trust me.
Another great JB anecdote for the after dinner circuit.
So fast.
They got one of their wingers scored an incredible try against France. A gas from like the halfway line, beat half a dozen
players.
Yeah,
it definitely was France, actually. He's got a surprisingly normal name, 13.
Goodhue. Is it Goodhue or is that the 15?
No, it's not him. Whoever it is, it's not him.
We are full of
facts.
Knowledgeable punditry here.
Excellent.
I'm about speculation, not about facts.
But there you go.
And just on that, the England scrum held up very well all tournament.
Yep.
Two of the front row play for Yorkshire Carnegie.
Yeah, you're saying this.
Paul Hill, the tight head, and I can't remember the hooker's name, but the hooker captained Yorkshire Carnegie when he was only 18 years old, which is a hell of a feat.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone comes in for him, because obviously Carnegie were mid-table in the Championship last year.
They've been throwing about some cash. So I think they've signed Dean Schofield.
They have, because he's going to be coaching next year at Sedgley Park.
Is that right?
Is that right?
It is.
Oh, wow. Big Dean.
That's about his level now, the Championship.
Well, they've also signed...
Phil's been very polite and...
furiously nodding along.
Oh, not Sedgley Park. I thought that's what you were playing.
No.
Championship's his level. He didn't look right in the Premiership.
Or at Toulon.
No, there's also...
How did he get to Toulon?
Saint-André, yeah.
How did he get to Toulon? Evian Lewis Roberts got to Toulon.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's about who you know. Who's the other one they signed? Rugby League legend, Kevin Sinfield.
Sinfield, yeah.
Tom Casson has gone now from Harlequins.
Yeah.
He's been plagued by injury, but actually quite a good player. Although apparently Sale weren't that keen, so what does that say? So they've got cash and they'll be a real force. Now, will they be able to beat Bristol? Who knows?
Very unlikely. Their best hope is the Premiership getting expanded to 14 teams.
I'd say so. The other complete banana skin there for both Bristol and Yorkshire is going to be London Welsh, because they have signed a lot of players.
And they have so much cash.
They do have a lot of cash.
But they've not got the facilities behind them. They've not got the fan base.
And London Welsh in Oxford isn't London Welsh. I don't care what anyone says. London Welsh is like Old Deer Park.
Yeah.
You know, if they can somehow do something with that, it'd be a wonderful, wonderful club.
Agreed. Agreed.
I wonder if that's actually just a club which needs to stay in the lower leagues and stay to its roots rather than try and push into professionalism.
Yeah.
It might be better for everyone.
Agreed.
Right then, gents. We are going to reminisce about World Cups gone by as we look ahead to the World Cup 2015 by rattling through another three letters on our A to Z of the World Cup. Today, it's the letters D, E and F. Thank you very much for the suggestions and the interaction regarding last week's and this week's.
So, do we know
Twitter.
What A, B and C are?
Yeah, we did it last week.
Yeah, yes. But what are they?
If you can't remember.
Anti-apartheid or Australia?
It's Australia.
Australia.
I know what it's not.
Burger, Jacques Burger.
Yeah.
And
Campisi.
Yes.
Oh, good.
The letter D, then. I think there's one that got quite a few suggestions on Twitter, and I don't know, and it's the one that instinctively thought to my mind, but you look like you're about to come up with a different one there, Phil.
I'd really like to go for Dusan, which is Jean-Marc Dusan, who is the only player to have made his debut in a World Cup final.
Oh, wow. Fact.
His international debut was in the 2011 World Cup final in that farcical French team run by Marc Livremont, but not actually run by Marc Livremont, run by Dusatoir and Harry Nordicke.
By the way, that's probably the way, if you want a new coaching team, bearing in mind what they did getting to the World Cup final, that's not a bad way to go, is it?
You're quite right.
The skills can be done by Harry Nordicke. The back's done by Harry Nordicke and the forward's done by Dusatoir.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, there you go. That's a good one.
I'd quite like to go for him, but I wouldn't. What were you going to suggest?
Yanni De Beer.
De Beer.
Like record number of drop goals.
Well, I actually think on the same theme, just drop goal.
Yeah, you're right.
Drop goal.
No other place has a drop goal been so prominent than in World Cups.
South
Africa in 99, England in 03.
Yeah, Yanni De Beer 5 against England.
Rob Andrew in 99.
Against Australia.
Or was it 95 against Australia in the quarterfinals?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great shout.
Yeah, no, let's just do it. And of course, it was the moment that any casual fan of rugby in the United Kingdom, when they think about the World Cup, they think of Johnny Wilkinson dropping a goal. So, yeah.
Yeah. With his right foot as well.
For such a defining memory, and then more rugby aficionados, people who have been rugby fans for a lot longer will remember other moments. So, yeah, drop goal. Done.
Good.
E.
I think we're going to come with the same one here.
Go on.
One of the few players, one of only six players to win the World Cup twice, captained Australia the second time he won it, and the highest scoring forward in Test history.
Yes, exactly.
John Eales.
John Eales, completely. And when you actually think about it, it would seem ridiculous. If a second row got up and kicked sticks these days, it would just be... You wouldn't imagine it. You couldn't think of it.
And I've said it before, but the only other example I can really think of is Christian Califano, and he only kicked against a rubbish Romanian team for Saracens.
Well, we saw Vadim Kobolash
attempt it.
Good strike, though, to be fair. Yeah, did he not get it?
No. That was the really terrible drop goal. But he did a proper conversion kick.
Oh yes,
Moldova.
Yeah, no, and he got it from the touchline.
Yeah, you're right.
But just imagine now, like, who's the equivalent Australian second row captain material? Hallwell.
Let's say
so. James Hallwell in the World Cup just sort of goes, "We'll go for sticks, please, sir," and then calls to the tee. Everyone would be like, "What? No!" Not only did he kick sticks, he was blooming good at it as well. Yeah. He was the best Australian at kicking.
Well, here's the thing. I can't remember the game exactly, but did he call for sticks to make the decision right? Sticks it is, and then realise it was him kicking? Or do you know it was him kicking and then call for sticks?
Just in general?
Well, no, because there's one particular, I think South Africa, when he kicks to win.
Ah, right.
Sorry, okay, yeah. So there's an example where the kicker's off, and I think it's like last kick of the game, and he kicks it to win the game. And I just can't remember if he did it and then realised no one else was there to kick it, or he called it himself, like,
Bring it on.
He'd fancy that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd always
captain,
fancy
that. Captain.
I know I've told this story a lot of times, but Broughton Park were playing on a windy day against a team called Northwich. And we were doing terrible. Northwich was second in the league, and we were fighting.
I played in this game.
This is an incredible, incredible story. And they were ahead. We scored a try. We didn't convert. And we get a penalty on our own 10, on their 10 metre. And our coaches, who were pretty hot-headed at the time, they shout over to the captain and they go, "Corner! Corner!" Because our driving wall was brilliant. To which they heard, "Connor," who is our loosehead prop. So, and also our kicker.
Who occasionally kicks.
So our captain, Dave Hamby, turns around and goes, "Connor!" And by the time we set up, because of the wind and stuff, we can't hear. Anyway, thankfully, Connor slots it and we won the game. We still got relegated that season, but...
Incidentally, that's just a little pet hate of mine. Like...
Connor?
No, not Connor. Just,
okay, wind.
Just... Captains that have to listen to the coach to make a decision, and coaches that tell the captain what to do.
But
no, when you cross the whitewash, your coaching job, I think, on the pitch, it's done. That's the captain's call. That's my opinion. Yeah. Maybe it's old school, but I don't like it.
I don't know. I think there's different models for different personalities.
Oh, you're actually. Now a coach.
Yeah, now Jay's getting into coaching.
But I see too much of this. You're in the All Blacks, and Stuart Lancaster does it as well. As, oh, we're just going to create a community and an environment where there's eight leaders and, you know, everyone knows.
No, the person who did that more than anyone else, and most Clive revolutionary
Woodward.
Of all, Clive Woodward.
Yeah. So, I can see that. But there again, they always say about Clive Woodward that Martin Johnson was the embodiment of Clive Woodward on the field. So you can't have it both ways.
Mm. Yeah, well, if
but he was point, making the decision.
Yeah,
so that's fine.
Martin Johnson makes the decision, but he understands like the blueprint is set by Clive Woodward,
which is basically the same thing, right?
Anyway. John Eales gets the letter E. The letter F. Then it's going to be some contenders.
Yeah, there's a few that were put on Twitter. France were put forward a few times. For some spectacular games, mostly against New Zealand.
Yeah.
They're spectacular games.
Well, the best game of rugby I've ever seen was.
Is that the one with Christoph Dominici?
In 1999.
Yes, yeah. But I can name almost the entire backline, or it used to be able to.
Hell of a game, that, in 1999. And then in 2007, when they beat New Zealand in the quarterfinals.
Which I went to watch in Cardiff.
Ah, that was the most unbelievable game.
Because I can't remember who the French scrum half was, but he picked it up and he just ran. Oh, it might be Nella Saud.
Yeah.
He picks up the ball and he runs diagonally backwards across the field with all the backs chasing him, and then he chips it out.
Boots it out, yeah. But that was the game when Dusatoir, who could have been a nomination for D, made 38 tackles in that game.
Yeah, it was quite a good game to watch.
Unbelievable defence, because New Zealand was so dominant. Brilliant.
I think the backline for the other game we're talking about was Lemaison, Garbajosa, I want to say Glass, Dominici, Entomac, and it's not Bernard Sals. Maybe it's a bit after, bit
Andre Saint Andre.
No, it wasn't him. I think it was Bernard Sals. But what a team! What a team!
Yeah, it was brilliant and some amazing moments. And again, 2007 again, Dusatoir leading the way. Fiji was another one that got suggested, and that would be a shout that I was keen to push as well. France would be a great one. Fiji in 1987. Now I remember once my mum had to work on a Saturday, and me and my brother had to sort of go along with her. And she took us to Woolworths, and she said, "Right, buy a video, and you can watch it in the boardroom." So we bought a video of the 1987 World Cup highlight video,
brilliant.
And we put it in, and they did this whole musical segment to Peter Gabriel's Big Time. They went, "What an amazing impact Fiji made on the World Cup." And they did this like montage of, and the skills were absolutely ridiculous.
How does Peter Gabriel's song go?
Big, I'll get it up now. So you just Big Time, Peter Gabriel, and it was a montage of this ridiculous skill, and I'd never seen anything like it before. It was like another. It was like a different.
Is it like the first time anyone ever saw a Cruyff turn type?
Exactly. It was like a different species of rugby. I'd never seen anything like it. And they just had this incredible impact and caught the imagination of loads of people back in 1987. And then since then, and they got through to the quarterfinals in that year, unexpectedly, out of the blue.
Do you know what? I remember a BBC report, and it was about Samoa, when Samoa
either beat Wales or they were in their pomp. And the report said, and this is why they're so good at rugby. And it showed a bunch of Samoan kids chasing chickens, which I just think now, like, how ridiculously racist does it sound? And would it pass BBC compliance now?
I wouldn't have thought so.
I don't think so.
It's not as bad as your Shingle Beach comments, but it's not really bad.
But of course, JB being a Welshman, he's trying to avoid talking about Fiji and that victory.
Here's what I'll say.
2007, Fiji-Wales in the group stages.
What a game.
What a game. There was a guy called Will Blackwell who decided in a Welsh rugby club, Colwyn Bay, he was English, he's going to wind us all up. He's only 20 and pretty roundly, he got a hard time. And what he did is he decided to, I don't know, flick the V's or whatever, run off to his car, which was in a gated car park. So we then gated the car park so he couldn't leave. And we threatened to fill up his petrol tank with water until he came out to face his punishment.
Wow.
Poor old
I think
Will.
We can hear the moment.
We
can't get it in English, we're only getting it in Russian.
Is this us chasing Will Blackwell?
that is the winning try against Wales in the pool stage of 2007. Incredible. Amazing. 38-34.
Well, I'm going to have to say France. Yep. And the reason I say France is I'm Welsh and I own one Welsh bit of kit. Not even a Welsh top. On the other hand, I own four French rugby tops because I was just amazed by what they could do. And actually, one of the first rugby memories I have was watching them in that World Cup. So I have to say France.
Yeah.
I'll go with France as well.
And they're the best team never to win a World Cup as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to the final twice or three times, is it?
Twice.
Twice. And they've got to the semi-finals pretty much every year but one.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Tormenting the All Blacks as they go.
Yeah. They're like kryptonites, the All Blacks, aren't they?
I just wish France was still more like France. And you know, everyone talks about the player drain affecting the countries where the players come from, but actually it's only France that gets hurt by all this.
When I think of France, yeah, exactly. You think of that offloading game. Oof. And that, what was that? Was it Thomas Castagnier? No, he started the move off. It was Philippe Saint-André and that try at Twickenham when they ran it from behind their own line.
Do you know what I think of? I mean, the whole majesty of France comes from they brought all these forwards together, and the old French rules of you never lose at home and you'd rather get into a fist fight and just these horrible, horrible, nasty men. And they that's the pack. And then the way that they almost have disdain for their backs. But then when they start throwing it, you know, they may as well all be wearing pink bow ties and the last of it.
I hope this is English commentary. No, it's not. You can't. But this is 1991 against England. England have just missed a penalty kick. And France run it from behind their own sticks. England were assuming they were going to do a drop goal.
Oh, that is beautiful.
It's absolutely ridiculous try.
Give it again!
it's a ridiculous try. And what a kit as well.
Yeah, beautiful kit.
Yeah.
Right, have a look at Saint-André's try v England in 91 on YouTube. It's
an amazing continually
try.
Makes me laugh. Old school wingers. And just what George North or Christian Wade or a crossbreed between the two would do to them.
Lomu, when he came in. He was...
the way they kind of... They've got that awkward kind of jinky private school step inside.
Yeah.
And now you've got, you just roll out the George North or the Nadolo or someone.
All about 11 and a half stone as well.
Yeah.
Like, really skinny.
Baggy
like,
cotton tops.
They'd be telling jokes when the forwards were doing weights. Smoking down the behind the back of the
now
bike shed.
Now you've got to contend with Anthony Watson, Marlon Yard, Christian Wade, George North.
So what we need next week are the letters G, H and I for our Rugby World Cup A to Z. And also listen out next week for Jeff Parling, who will be hoping that in years to come we're doing G for Jeff. G for Jeff.
Has he got enough time to do something impressive enough for G for Jeff yet?
Well, we could win a World Cup by maybe not doing a Ben K and actually scoring a try.
Yeah, but he's got to do it by next week. So if you can email him a list of things to do.
Yeah.
To do for the previous World Cups.
Yeah.
For next week.
For next week, that'd be great.
All right, great. Good. And hopefully by then we'll have, by next week, we'll know exactly what's happening with Talupe Faletau and we'll be able to talk about that as well.
The only way you could actually successfully get in is if you assassinated the entire 2003 World Cup winning squad.
Maybe. I don't know why he'd get in for that.
It'd make him a famous G, surely.
It'd make him famous, but wouldn't it make him famous in the same way as the woman that came on and stabbed the tennis player? And I'm not sure if she's cheesing in the A to Z of tennis.
maybe not.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Monica Seller's getting stabbed.
That's the one.
Yeah. Right, so G, H and I, please, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Thank you for listening. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a little review on iTunes as well. Very much appreciate it. And until next time, JB.
Thank you, Tim.
Until next time, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.